Blog Talk Radio.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the Joint Staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, "No." He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq? Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs," meaning the Secretary of Defense's office, "today." And he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
Wow.
The truth is about the Middle East is, had there been no oil there, it would be like Africa. Nobody is threatening to intervene in Africa. The problem is the opposite. We keep asking for people to intervene and stop it. And there's no question that the presence of petroleum throughout the region has sparked great power involvement. Whether that was the specific motivation for the coup or not, I can't tell you, but there was definitely, there's always been this attitude that somehow we could intervene and use force in the region.
All right, everybody. Welcome to Monday Night, the Constitution Hour. I am your host, Ron Golden, and that was General Wesley Clark discussing our involvement in Iraq. And I have on the phone with me, I believe, Mr. Bill Strong from Indiana. Is that you, Bill?
That's me, Ron, and I'm with a host of other people.
Linda Phil, right to the left coast, Nick and Yola's Road.
Hillbilly James from Freetown, Indiana.
Dad Scott, Freetown, Indiana. Woohoo! We missed you!
We're at the reunion.
Absolutely. I knew you guys, and for some of the other listeners out there that may not be aware, there is a Patriot Families family reunion up in Indiana this week, and I, unfortunately, was not able to attend.
We had it for you, Paul.
You know, going back to that... There you go. Going back, I want to go back to this clip of General Clark and play it again, because I want you to listen to a couple of things. Number one, the names. He names a person. And then I want you to make specific note of the nations or countries that he names, aside from Iraq. So let's play that again. It's just a two-minute clip. Won't take but just a little bit.
About
here.
10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon, and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just...
Okay, Wolfowitz. Who's this Wolfowitz guy? Anybody know who Wolfowitz is? Okay. Paul Wolfowitz. There's a couple other guys I wanted to mention. A guy named Richard Pearl. Another guy named Doug Feith. A guy named, William Crystal. A guy named Dick Cheney. If you're familiar with what was called the PNAC, Project for a New American Century document, where they outlined the need for a new Pearl Harbor-type event, in the United States under the guise of what was needed to restore America's defenses. Because obviously, after all of our expenditures collapsing the Soviet Union, we were virtually destitute and unable to defend ourselves, or the military-industrial complex needed more money, one or the other, we're not sure which. But, you know, that PNAC document was written in 1997, and interestingly enough, PNAC did not exist in 1996. There was another group, a think tank, that was put together at the behest of a gentleman from Israel named Netanyahu. And Benjamin Netanyahu with Richard Perle in this think tank, they created a document called Clean Break. And you really should look it up sometime. It's quite a fascinating document. In this document, written in 1996, long prior to, or before 9/11, long before our involvement in Iraq, comes this group of guys that are working directly for the Israeli government and, in fact, are dual citizens. And they put together this document. So what they're doing is directing Israeli policy. One of the things that they discuss is the need for Saddam Hussein, quote, removing Saddam Hussein from power in Iraq was an important Israeli strategic objective in its own right as a means of foiling Syria's regional ambition. They go on in this document talking about ways that they could entice the United States of America, the U.S., into invading Iraq and dethroning Saddam Hussein. Now, General Clark mentions some other countries in there. Lebanon. Now, for a very long, long time, we have been indoctrinated with the idea that Lebanon is one of the greatest threats to Israeli sovereignty, as well as Syria. Syria is a direct threat. And I found it interesting that in this article, they mentioned Hama as one of their justifications for, and you'll like this, I think, the new strategy was to pursue regime change in the nations surrounding Israel. Now, where have we heard that term, regime change? I find that very, very interesting. That they used this idea, this terminology in 1996, and it becomes adopted into our own foreign policy, and it's the talking points on news broadcasts all throughout 2001, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, regime change. Remember, we're not war, it's regime change. And we've got another caller, 941. Who have we got here?
Mr. Ron Golden, how you do?
Mr. Robert, how are you, sir?
Robert. I'm hanging in there. That's all I can do.
Well, let me finish my thought here on what's
go
going
ahead,
on.
Sir. Go ahead. Go ahead.
So, you know, when we look at the evidence with these think tanks, it's very difficult to say that the United States has done anything other than implement an Israeli foreign policy as our own. Now, I don't mind saying that, you know, Israel is an ally, and you know, if someone's attacking them, we should assist our allies. But let's take a look at the bigger picture. You know, the Ukraine, just in the last 5 years or so, signed a nuclear non-proliferation treaty, and as one of the guarantees in that treaty for them to sign on was that the United States would provide them protection if they were invaded or attacked, right? And what are we doing? We're sending money, ladies and gentlemen. We're sending hypothecated strips of paper. And where is this money coming from? Well, it's a loan from the taxpayers to the federal government. And that money is going to go to the Ukraine, and the Ukraine is going to use that money to pay its bills to the Soviets. The very same Soviet companies that the Congress has placed under sanction, don't you know? And the very same companies that owe money to big U.S. banking interests who are going to get that money back in return, and we're going to get stuck paying the bill. So you've got to help me out here. With one country, Israel, we're going to allow dual citizens to influence our foreign policy so that it's beneficial for Israel, allegedly, and yet when we have a clear obligation under an absolute treaty, we ignore it. How does this work? I mean, you know, when you start to add up the evidence, something stinks here.
It does.
And I found another article that was very interesting, and it's an interview with I'm not going to call him a gentleman, but with a man who actually fought with Al-Qaeda before they were Al-Qaeda, when they were Mujahideen in Afghanistan against the Soviets. And he has come out and made the claim that I made on one of my shows not too awful long ago, and that is that ISIS is purely and wholly run by the U.S. intelligence agencies. And one of the dead giveaways, I mean, let's be honest here, Al-Qaeda says that ISIS is too brutal, and ISIS... In a brilliant move, and you have to admire the strategy of this, in a brilliant move, ISIS claims that all the Muslims that take the trek to Mecca every year, the pilgrimage to Mecca, to worship at the Kaaba, right, the most holy site in all of Islam, they have been deemed by this group, ISIS, as apostates and idolaters because, according to ISIS, they worship the monument, the Kaaba, and not Allah. So their reasoning is, we're going to go into Saudi Arabia and we're going to destroy the monuments of Islam. Really? No self-respecting Muslim would, while still drawing breath, destroy the Kaaba. They just wouldn't do it. So I think that this guy is at least got a legitimate point that these guys that are masquerading around Iraq, claiming to be the new caliphate, are full of crap. And in fact, when you connect all the dots, going all the way back to World War I and step forward, connect all those dots, what you will see is there is indeed, ladies and gentlemen, a new caliphate, a new redrawing of the Middle East, and the first redrawing of the Middle East that created borders and nation states where there were none previously was known as the Red Line Agreement. And when Barack Obama came out and said that Syria had crossed a red line, and yet Obama knew even then that there was not the political will in the United States to go into Syria militarily, then he knew that he had to give the signal that we've got to do something else. And that signal was no less than the group in Syria to pack their bags, and I apologize for this daggum phone ringing in the background, some 800 number, no doubt wanting to sell me aluminum siding, to pack their bags, move out of Syria into Iraq, and begin to destabilize there. And one of the reasons why was Maliki, because he wasn't playing ball the way the Americans wanted. Now, here we have this document from 96 where the Israelis and Netanyahu are calling for regime change, and one of the first regimes they want to change is Saddam Hussein. Why? They knew, and they still know, that Saddam, despite all of his shortcomings, was an equalizing effect against Iran. But, no matter, let's destabilize the region, create chaos, and the whole purpose of the Iran move, from an Israeli point of view, was to get at Syria. Then we go back to that article about Hama, right? When we go back to 1983, when this massacre occurred in Hama, Syria, just happens to be the exact same town that the Obama administration used as a claim that Assad was gassing his own people in the town of Hama. I don't know what it is about Hama that I guess they've just got their foot in the door in that town, the intelligence agencies from several countries. But in 1983, from what I've been able to find in my research, is that Israel was funding an offshoot of Hamas that was present in Hama, and Israel was feeding them intel. And there was a lot of turmoil going on in Syria at that time.
Ron, you're really fading out, Ron.
I'm sorry about that. I hope I'm not fading out. I'm still here. One of the things that... No problem. One of the things that Israel did was they sent false intelligence to this group in Hama that Assad had been assassinated. Well, you can imagine they were overjoyed. And in their joyous celebration, they went about the town of Hama murdering Syrian officials. Well, you can well imagine that, just like here in the good old U.S. of A., if a group of people went around and started murdering government officials, there's going to be a response. Now, the response in Syria, given the climate, was a little bit different. Assad sent in some airstrikes, and, yeah, 10,000-plus people were killed. It wasn't simply one-sided. It was manipulated into occurring. And it was done so because it was seen as expedient by a group outside called Israel. Now, I'm not here trying to just point the finger of blame at Israel for everything that goes wrong in the world. And that's just, I'm just giving you the facts as I know them to this point. I just find it very interesting that we hear these terms and we see this policy implemented. And even in the interview with this guy, the former Al-Qaeda, you know, he had a division of 120 jihadist fighters that he was leading in Afghanistan. Even in his interview, he used the word, the magic word, colonialism. Mm. And he said, you know, these people are ignorant. These people that are putting out these news reports are ignorant. They don't see the truth behind what's going on with ISIS and this, you know, supposed caliphate. Yeah, buddy.
Amen. Preach it. Keep preaching.
So, you know, the problem is that, and now, of all times, now we're having hearings on the Veterans Administration. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to pose to you that the Veterans Administration has been corrupt and ignoring and mistreating our veterans since before the Vietnam conflict.
Yeah,
and only now are we so damn concerned that we're holding congressional hearings and having a big to-do about our veterans and the way they've been mistreated by the government they thought they were serving.
Right, false.
That's why I threw my hat in the ring, Ron. Right there. When Ryan said, when the social liberal agenda means invest, they mean tax and spend. After the fact, he cut the veterans' benefits. But this Ryan budget plan, I saw red. I don't know why, I just did. Maybe it's because I was in so much pain with my leg. I don't know. Hello?
Well, it's interesting to me. At the same time, and I apologize for the show this evening. I'm trying to get caught up on a little bit. I spent a week on vacation, and I literally did not listen to any news, didn't turn on a computer. It didn't follow anything at all, nothing, for 7 days.
You felt better, too, it was like.
Well, I see this little spat that's being parried about between Rand Paul and Rick Perry.
Oh, God.
And Rick Perry, evidently over the weekend, charged that Paul's, quote, isolationist views are dangerous. And guys, this is the exact same bullshit rhetoric that they threw out against Ron Paul.
All right.
Paul, the article says, a Tea Party favorite, responded by taking a swipe at Perry's fashion accessories in an article published in Politico magazine entitled Rick Perry is Dead Wrong. Now, Paul had a great retort. And he said, quote, apparently his new glasses haven't altered his perception of the world or allowed him to see it any more clearly. With 60,000 foreign children streaming across the Texas border, I am surprised Governor Perry has apparently still found time to mischaracterize and attack my foreign policy.
Oy.
And
I'm lost for words,
here,
Rod.
Well, here's the quote, okay? And it's telling because this one quote lets you know exactly what camp, what group of people Rick Perry is catering to. Quote, there is a growing, emerging threat to the United States. And in terms of trying to deal with it on a global basis, we are the only ones who can lead that effort. Nobody else can. Nobody else will. So, in other words, we have to be the policemen of the world.
Exactly. But my question is, who's played psychological warfare on us? I want to know that question. Because I lost a constituent because my explanation of the psychological warfare was not good enough for her. So I lost a constituent, which I don't care because I gained two today. So, you know, that's how I feel about it. My views on warfare is psychological, period. is they're just messing with the minds of everybody that's all concerned. They're using our tax dollars to
look, everything. I'm gonna tell you right now. If you look, go back to, you know, the allegory of Plato's cave. Perception is reality. And the reality is that everything is psychological.
Exactly. She said
it's
I did
all psychological. Now, I like another retort that.
But
I like another retort.
Go ahead.
I like another retort that Rand Paul put up when, you know, Liz Cheney and company, which is, of course, the company that I said or insinuated that Perry is playing to, Paul said, quote, if refusing to send Americans to die for a country that refuses to defend itself makes me an isolationist, then perhaps it's time we finally retire that pejorative.
I agree.
In other words, I don't want to send Americans to die for another country that won't even defend itself, Iraq,
exactly.
For one. I mean, their guys just turned over their guns to the other guys. Meanwhile, what the hell are we doing here at home? We're not defending this country. We're being overrun. And it's being done complicitly and intentionally by the very government that was created to do what? Safeguard our liberties. And what you're seeing is the wholesale destruction of the concept of private property, of borders, boundaries, sovereign nations. It's playing out before your very eyes.
But that's exact. Private property was one of the explanations I gave this constituent about psychological warfare. And it still didn't convince her. So I'm going on the radio show. I'll be on 107.5 FM at 9 a.m. Wednesday, July 16th. And I don't know what to say to her. So I explained it as clear as bell when I emailed her, and she gave me thumbs down, which to me says that she may be Republican, but she's part of the Republican progressive movement too. That's what it tells me.
Well,
and I don't need a person like that on my side. Am I right or wrong?
Well, you don't know, because one of the problems...
You can't trust them.
Again,
you can't trust anybody.
Well, no.
That's the whole
point. It's like the old saying, don't trust half of what you hear and even less of what you see.
Exactly.
I'll go back to the allegory of Plato's cave once again. You have to question how you know something. When someone tells you, you know, well, we need to do such and such in Iraq. How do you know that?
How did you come
to that conclusion? Right.
You have to ask them,
how do you come to that? How did you come to that conclusion? 9 times out of 10, they're just parroting what someone else has told them. And they don't have any clue about, you know, what led up to that ideology. How many people do you think... realize that, you know, much of our foreign policy is really coming out of Israel. How does that make sense for the U.S.?
It doesn't make any sense. At least, I've said this on your show numerous times about Israel. Let Israel take care of business themselves. Period.
Well,
stay away from the Middle East and get the hell out of get out of there.
Well, one of the new strategy in this document was to let the U.S. know that Israel can be self-reliant. Israel can make, and I'm quoting from the document, Israel can make a clean break from the past and establish a new vision for the U.S.-Israeli partnership based on self-reliance, maturity, and mutuality. Not one focused narrowly on territorial disputes, Israel's new strategy, based on a shared philosophy of peace through strength, where have we heard that bullcrap, reflects continuity with Western values by stressing that Israel is self-reliant, does not need U.S. troops in any capacity to defend it, including the Golan Heights, and can manage its own affairs. This was 1996. Now, hindsight being what it is, it's pretty easy to see. If you are a small nation state like Israel, and you want to begin the policy of preemptive intervention and regime change, you want to insulate yourself from that, and you want to tell the preemptive regime changers, don't worry about Israel. We can take care of ourselves. We don't need U.S. troops in Israel because we don't need you to come and institute regime change here. No, no. We're fine. It's absolutely preemptive and completely different than the strategy prior to.
I have to head a debate. Yada, he stands his ground. He doesn't back down. You know, and if we had more leaders like him, maybe the world would be a better place. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, it's just, I don't.
Well, apparently apparently the U.S. is just an arm of Israel at this point. We've been instituting their foreign policy since 1996.
It's a shame they can't do it for themselves with their own foreign policy.
Why should they? They have the policemen of the world to go out and enforce regime change for them in Egypt, in Lebanon, in Libya, in Syria, in Iraq, in Iran, and wherever else they want.
Yeah, we're not going to.
And how, I got to ask you, how in the hell does this benefit the U.S.?
It doesn't benefit the U.S. Nothing.
How does it benefit all the U.S. soldiers that have given their lives? Because they've not given their lives in defense of the Constitution. They've given their lives in defense of Israeli foreign policy.
Everybody,
I got a problem with that.
Everybody has a problem with that too, Ron. I said it's not. I mean, what about Egypt and Syria and the rest of those you-know-whats that attack Israel for no reason? It's the same story I've heard on your show numerous of times. Number one and number two. Nothing's ever going to get solved. Because you know why? The bottom line is everybody hates a Jew. That's what it is. Period. That's what it is, Ron.
I don't see it has anything to do with Jewish.
I think it does. A bigot will always be a bigot. A racist will always be a racist. Period. Everybody hates people. It's just a vile, vicious circle. It's just a vile, vicious circle, and nothing ever is going to get solved because we have too many guns in here in the United States that we have to worry about. People in my neighborhood are already killing each other. You know, people are panicking already. The revolution has started. And it's all because we already have our own caliphate on 1311 Cypress Avenue, Venice, Florida. All right. So I'm fighting.
Are you the caliphate? Are you the caliph?
No, I'm not the caliphate. I'm on my own business. I'm just running for office because for the cause. But the point of the matter is, you can't trust either side of the aisle. You can't trust anybody now. My faith in politics and the system is broken. And now we have a $3.7 billion stimulus package for amnesty. So my question is...
Isn't that awesome?
Who's right and who's wrong?
Well,
I said that once for all. Just make Mexico a 51st state of the union and call it a day, and even make Canada a 52nd state of the union and call it a day, so we can build the Keystone Pipeline. So we won't have to depend on Syria and all those other bastards, including Israel, too. Let them just kill each other over there. Really. I've had enough of it.
Well, that's the funny thing. Explain to me what it is in the Middle East we depend on here in the United States.
Oil. It's all about the
Wrong.
Oil and the sand. Draw the sand. Draw the line in the sand. It's oil and sand.
How much oil do we import from the Middle East?
I don't know, Ron. I don't know how many billions of gallons there is. There's enough oil
4%.
In the United States. There's 4, enough oil
4%.
That we... But we're still fighting over it.
Why?
We're still fighting over it for the oil. That's the blood. The oil is the blood. And it's not going to end.
Why oil? We get oil from Venezuela. We get it from Canada.
We
produce oil
that.
Here.
There's a rhyme. I'll go back to Bush.
There's a connection. You're right.
I will go back to Bush's administration when Bush was arming the guy from Egypt and helping him walk. That's where the problem started, right there. Okay, that's where I draw the oil in the sand. Right when Bush got his hand and helped him, just like when. Governor of Jersey hugged the heck out of Obama. Same deal. You know, it's like Charlie Crist being a Republican and changing to Democrat. It's annoying. It is so annoying that I have I just sit here and I did one thing. I had to defend my father, his honor. And I defended it, and I don't care about anything else because I defended him. I spent $1,500 so far just defending my dad. And I could go to bed peacefully at night. And I don't care what happens to the world if you want to know the truth. You know? But the bottom line is, we as citizens of the United States of America, we have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure the people we elect are constitutionally conservative, follow the rule of law, and abide by the Constitution of the United States. And if we keep on electing the wrong people, nothing is going to get solved, period. That's
well, it's pretty clear to me that we do continue to elect the wrong people, so how do we resolve that?
Huh? I didn't hear you, Ron. I'm sorry.
I said it's pretty clear to me, after 235 years of voting, we continually elect the wrong people. How do we avoid
exactly.
that?
Exactly. So we have nothing to blame but ourselves. If you want to know the truth, we have nothing to blame but ourselves. You know, we have nothing to blame but ourselves. I mean, I'm free of blaming. I'm free of grudge. I don't have a grudge of anybody anymore. And I don't hate anybody, and I have no fear of anybody, okay?
I don't hate anybody.
I don't either anymore, Ron.
I don't hate Israel. I don't hate Muslims. I don't hate Jews. But when I see these things,
it really infuriates me.
And you know what? I don't fault. The Israelis one bit. They were able to influence the United States government, the biggest, baddest military on the earth, into instituting their own foreign policy. That's a pretty awesome accomplishment.
It is a good
from Israel's standpoint.
So we should
even at times.
We should learn something.
Yeah, even at times when it wasn't necessarily in our best interest. I don't hate them for that. I'm not angry with them for that.
Yeah, but religiously, you might be. little bit.
Why? Why would I care?
I really don't care
what someone else's religion is. I don't care. And to me, when we talk about someone being Jewish, to me that's a religious thing. It's not an ethnic thing, to me, for someone to be Jewish. That's religion. That's Judaism. I don't see all people. I don't see all people from. Yeah, I don't see all these people from that part of the world, the Levant, as being Jewish. I just don't. If they're a practicing Jew, if they're practicing Judaism, then they're Jewish. I take them at their word. I believe them. If someone is a Christian, I believe them. You know, if they're Baptist or Episcopalian or Catholic or Protestant or whatever, I believe that they're Christian. I have no reason to question them at that point. Why would I? So I don't see Jewish as being ethnic. And I was thinking about this today because, you know, black people from African continent, we call them Africans. And brown people from Brazil, we call them Brazilians. And the people from Germany, we call them Germans. And people from Spain, we call Spaniards. And the French, French. And, you know, Europeans, Europeans. And so on. But Israel, we don't call them Israelites or Israeli. For the most part, we call them Jews. And that's not wholly accurate. Because there are a lot of people in Israel that aren't Jewish. They're not practicing Judaism. You were perhaps raised in a mixed Jewish family, but that doesn't make you Jewish. You've said to me yourself that you're not practicing Judaism.
No, I just practice by myself. No.
So does that make you Jewish, or does that make you something else? I mean, I don't know.
It makes me that I have faith in God. I mean, whatever I do, Ron, I always have faith in God. And whatever, you know, I always turn to him. Let me tell you something. The email you sent me about the Lord's Prayer. Remember that one? That got me through my surgery every day. Believe me, because I didn't think I was going to make it. Since I've known you, Ron, I've almost died. Well, I didn't know you until 2011, but before then, in 2010, I almost died with a bout of diverticulitis and a pinched nerve at the same time. Saved my leg. So God doesn't want me to die for some reason. By rights, I should be on my way out, getting a stroke and having a heart attack, blah, 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 high cholesterol, every hypothyroid, every walking medical word in the book I have, and I'm still here. The guy won't let me go. God won't let me go.
What do they call that? And I'm just teasing, but is that like a hypochondriac?
Yeah, that's me. Like you're smoking
Robert,
a cigarette while you're talking to me.
I'm not smoking a cigarette.
You're smoking some medical marijuana?
Nope, I don't smoke.
You quit?
I have an e-cigarette.
Do you
I
really?
Have an e-cigarette.
Did you really quit, Ron?
Yeah.
When did you quit?
I haven't had a cigarette in over a year.
Is that because of the pneumonia?
No. No, the pneumonia was just a couple of months ago.
Is it because your wife put a gun into your head and said you better quit?
Nope, had nothing to do with that.
I'm giving you the business.
No, I know you are.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
how many times a year do I never get to give you a rough time?
I know, man. You never call in. Now you're back again. So good to have you back.
I had to answer some questions on gun control, and it was tough. It was 4 pages, and it took me almost all day to do it.
Good Lord. Gun control is simple. You make sure you have good target acquisition. You know what's behind your target.
Yeah, but it's the
and
way
you
they,
slowly
can I
sleep.
Can I share with you some of the questions?
Sure.
Do you would you mind? I mean, I just want to see how you would answer these questions.
Oh, no problem, man. Bring them on. I would enjoy that.
These are the written. Because I had to look at the Florida statutes, because I went by the Florida statutes, and I also went by the Sarasota Sheriff County's guidelines, you know, just to make doubly sure. But the questions that I'm having problems with, Ron, here's one of them. Yes or no? How would you answer this?
Waiting.
Wait a second. God almighty. Okay, hold on a second. Yes or no, Ron? Question one, constitutional carry. Currently, there are four states of the country, Alaska, Arizona, Vermont, and Wyoming, that have what is referred to as constitutional carry, as their concealed carry law. The law simply allows anyone who is legally able to purchase a firearm, which does not include felons or other prohibited persons, that's in parentheses, to carry a concealed handgun without need of a government-issued permit. Did you answer yes or no?
Well, I haven't heard the question yet.
That's the question, yes or no.
Are you in favor of constitutional carry? Absolutely.
Yes, I put yes.
Yeah.
Now, this is a tricky one. Constitutional carry, and they have it underlined, not does not do away with the existing permit system and its related reciprocity agreements. It merely gives citizens another option for how to defend themselves and their loved ones. Of course, I put yes. Question number two, Firearms Protection Act. The Second Amendment Protection Act would make unconstitutional federal anti-gun laws or executive orders unenforceable in Florida. The Firearms Freedom Act is a similar bill to declare firearms that are made and retained within Florida to be outside the scope of federal regulation. With Washington lawmakers threatening more gun control and Eric Holder's embattled Justice Department looking for sidestep Congress, these 10th Amendment protections for gun owners of Florida is needed now more than ever. I put yes.
Well, they want you to put yes, but realistically, that last question is nonsensical.
Hey, thank you.
It's effective. It truly is, because it's effectively a state saying we're not going to recognize certain federal laws. Well, that's unconstitutional. It is.
I would
even go so far as to say that is an act of secession.
Act of what?
Now, secession.
Say that word again.
Secession.
Like secede from the Union?
Correct. Not that the Union exists anymore, because it doesn't. Not the Union that was created by the founding document, the Constitution, but that's a whole other topic.
Should I put a question mark about that and not answer it?
I think you should answer it, and of course the answer that the conservatives would be looking for is yes. But it goes back to the first question, because the first question also has a presupposition in there, and it presupposes that you're okay with the criminal background check that's currently run, which is still a form of government regulating your exercising your Second Amendment right. And all you have to do is look around at state laws, and you know, so many things now are considered a felony that all you have to do is violate the speed limit regulations by 25 miles per hour, and that's probably going to be deemed a felony.
Wow.
I'm sorry, but, you know, the felony issue is just one step and one of the first steps into encroaching upon the Second Amendment. I think it's pretty safe to say that if you look at the FBI statistics regarding criminal background checks and how effective they are at preventing gun crimes, you'll see that they are absolutely 0% effective at preventing violent gun crimes. They're also 0% effective at curtailing violent stabbings and violent beatings with baseball bats and tire irons. Right. And what they've found, actually, is that, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I have read them for last year, and, you know, out of the thousands of people that did not pass the criminal background check for one reason or another, the vast majority of them were some kind of clerical error, or they had gone through a divorce, and one of the first things the defense or the prosecuting attorney is going to tell the female in a divorce is to file an order of protection. The moment you've been filed with an order of protection on you, you no longer have the right to keep and bear arms because now you are a direct threat to your ex-wife and the community at large. Some of them were just, you know, somebody accidentally checked the wrong box on the form. But out of all of those that didn't pass, there actually were something on the order of 1,179, I believe the number was, but I may be completely wrong.
Right.
Actual felons who were trying to legally purchase a firearm, and most of those didn't know they were felons, you know, or there had been a clerical error in the paperwork in the courts. But out of all of those, there actually were like 18 cases that were actually bad guys trying to buy guns legally. You know how many of them were prosecuted? Two.
How many?
Two. So for the entire 2013 year, which, by the way, saw more gun sales in this country than any year previously, there were two people prosecuted under the damn criminal background check. It is a farce. It's an absolute farce. It is about as effective as our immigration policy.
Listen to the question number three on firearm prohibitions and magazine capacities. Bans on rifles, shotguns, or handguns, including semi-automatic firearms, in parentheses, are antithetical to the Second Amendment, which is our founding fathers' bulwark against government tyranny. Magazine capacity limits are simply arbitrary restrictions that fail to grasp the nature of firearms and their intended use. Limiting the number of cartridges one firearm can hold at any given time is akin to limiting the number of words a journalist is allowed to print. I said no.
I agree. No, I agree. Trying to limit the number of bullets I can put in a magazine in my handgun or rifle is akin to trying to limit journalists to a Twitter account, 140 characters or less.
So
it's
that's
no
a,
different.
So that's
it's
a yes.
Foolishness.
That's a yes. Is that
correct?
A yes?
It's foolishness.
See,
absolutely.
But it is,
Robert, antithetical. It is the antithesis. It is the exact opposite of the spirit of the Second Amendment.
I gotcha. I understand now. Jesus. You know, Ron? God, I'm glad I called you tonight.
And how ignorant is it? And I asked, go ahead with number four.
Number four, stand your ground. And I put yes for that. Florida has strong protections for innocent victims who are forced to defend themselves when attacked at a place that legally have a right to be. These laws have recently come under attack nationally by activists who seek to impose a victim's duty to flee from an attacker or else face criminal or civil penalties. That's a yes.
Right. You have an obligation to run for your life first and shoot later. That's the dumbest bunch of crap. I absolutely agree with stand your ground laws. They're absolutely, I think, unnecessary or should be unnecessary. I don't have an obligation to run away like a coward because some jackass has decided that it's his turn to take a bullet.
Exactly.
You know, this is one of the problems. You know, the old adage of an armed society is a polite society. If everyone's packing, well, you know what? You're going to have to be pretty brazen, or you're going to have to hope you pick the scrawniest, gangliest guy. He might be the best shot in the crowd. You just never know. So you're going to think twice. Why do you think, you know, I mean, we look at what our society has progressed into. Look at the police state that you see all around you. When police officers pull over a disabled man and taser him to death on the side of the road because they're all jacked up on adrenaline and they don't feel that he was in compliance or he didn't comply to a lawful order. You know, I'm willing to bet that if everyone in the state, if we actually had actual constitutional carry and people actually exercised that right and everyone was packing, number one, I think the cops would be less likely to stop and approach a motorist with a pissy attitude, knowing that that guy's just as well armed as he is. And, you know, it's ridiculous what we've turned ourselves into.
It is.
Also, I think at least in part ironic, that question that you were reading where it was talking about the cartridge box being the bulwark of the founders to protect us from a tyrannical or oppressive government. Really?
Well, I should have answered no, just to the fact that Eric Holder's name was mentioned. Right?
Let's look around at what we have. How well has the Second Amendment kept us from an oppressive, overreaching, and tyrannical government? Because I haven't seen anybody use that option.
That's a good point.
Since what, the Battle of Athens, Tennessee, I think was the last one. How well did it work out for the World War I veterans that got burned out in Washington, D.C. on the National Mall?
Right. It's crazy. This whole thing is crazy. I mean, like, for instance, question number 5, gun owners' privacy. Florida currently has a law protecting gun owners' privacy by prohibiting doctors from prying into the gun ownership status of patients. With the government's increasing role in the healthcare industry comes increased pressure on practitioners to report patients to authorities for even the slightest concerns to avoid liability. Gun owners should not be put in jeopardy of losing their rights simply for talking to a doctor about their health care concerns. I put yes.
Yeah. One of my visits to the doctor, are there any guns in the home? It's none of your damn business, but no. You know, well,
really?
Just the one.
They ask you that.
Absolutely.
I haven't been asked that yet. That's a no.
Some people say, well, they have to ask that, you know, in case there's children in the home. I said, children in the home? All my children are grown. They don't know anything about I mean, do they know I have grandchildren coming to the house or what?
Right.
Yeah, I have firearms. I have firearms. Those are called weapons. I also have a gun, but it's with me here in the office. The doctor's office. It's between my legs. That's a gun. Or at least that's what the military taught. That's what I was taught in the military. This is my weapon. This is my gun. One's for killing. The other's for fun. So, you know.
You're funny. You're so...
Are there any guns in the home currently? No, ma'am. Just my wife and my stepmother. I don't think they're packing.
Now, question six was very tricky, Ron. I couldn't answer this one yet. This is the mental health report. Mental health reporting. During the 2013 legislative session, a bill to strip gun rights from individuals who voluntarily seek certain mental health treatments was signed into law by Governor Rick Scott over the objections of tens of thousands of gun owners, as well as leaders of the mental health community. See, they've thrown me off there. Stripping gun rights for voluntary seeking mental health treatments not only denies law-abiding citizens due process, but also discourages individuals from seeking help if they need it. Now, what does that question have to do with guns and rights? That's what I don't understand.
That's a tough one, and I just wanted to say hello to Doc. And, you know, sorry I didn't acknowledge everybody else, Holger and FT, in the chat room. We've got a guest. I'm going to presume that that's either Rod Luke or our group up in Indiana. But, you know, I talked about this some time ago. Back in 2007, George Bush signed into law a new piece of legislation, and it was only about a paragraph long. It was very short and brief and sweet. Sweet to the point. And it had the backing of the NRA.
Right.
It pissed me off. I was very upset about it, and everyone thought I was nuts because they read it and they said, well, that doesn't even say anything about guns and gun controls. What are you so upset about? And I said, well, what it does, and this is a favorite trick that they like to pull in legislation, it references other legislative acts, prior acts, specific sentences in prior acts.
Hmm.
And what this legislation was doing, it was directed towards allowing law enforcement officials, police officers, to have access to your medical records in the squad car on the roadside.
Oh.
And
wow.
if you track back, the legislation that was referenced was the 1996 assault weapons ban. And it altered the language only slightly in one paragraph, which related to people who had been clinically diagnosed mentally defective.
Well, that's what this says, and I can't differentiate. I cannot differentiate. If anybody is getting mental health treatment, and if I take somebody
I would want to see the law. Well, but here's the thing. Number one, if you have someone that is voluntarily checking themselves in, that for paranoid schizophrenia.
Right. That person should not have a gun.
But here's the trick.
What's the trick?
No. What I'm telling you, that person, by checking themselves in, is demonstrating, are they not, some very proper behavior, responsible behavior. Okay?
Hold on, I'm going to tell you, they
are exhibiting responsible behavior. That means that while they recognize that they have a problem, and they're trying to get treatment for it, they are being responsible in doing so. Now, we can assume, and again, it's an assumption, but one would have to assume they might also, if they're a gun owner, recognize, you know, I shouldn't be around guns, or I shouldn't be in possession of a handgun. For the longest time,
I shouldn't be around guns either, because of my
scope. And that's a responsible decision, and that's a decision you should make, okay? Not the government. Will there be accidents? There are going to be accidents. You cannot, even if you're in the government cannot keep everybody safe from bad things happening. And you do not diminish a person's rights based on what could occur. Because what we're doing when we establish these preemptive blue laws, in my opinion, is we are establishing pre-crime.
I understand would that be a yes answer or a no answer?
For me, it's a no answer. I would not support stripping someone's rights based on, and it, you know, many times these adjudicated or clinically diagnosed as mentally defective, that could mean a lot of things. You know, when I was a kid, I was diagnosed with ADHD. Well, that's clearly a mental disorder. So does that count? You have veterans coming back that are diagnosed with PTSD. They're not allowed to own weapons then under that same thing. Sorry, but I don't think that you can just make that call against everyone and strip
I have a very bad problem answering these questions, Ron. I've been studying this for the past. I got it in the mail 2 weeks, and finally I got tired of it. And it intimidated the heck out of me, but I sat down and I read it, went along with the Florida statutes, and I just, you know, either way, I want to make sure I have it right, and now even in talking to you, I still don't know if I have it right. You know what I'm saying?
See, here's my problem, and you should go back and listen to the last show that I did, because I covered part of this. And here's the thing. I did. I've actually covered this fairly extensively. Here's my take on gun ownership, okay? And I know a lot of people disagree with it, and that's fine. You can disagree with me. We do not have the right, individually or as a collective society, to disarm anyone other than the individual that is actively pointing a weapon at us and threatening our lives. Aside from that guy, you have no right to interfere with someone else's right to self-defense, even if that someone else is a former felon, even if he's a former murderer, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
I would tell you that, you know, if you've got a problem with allowing a prior murderer, convicted murderer, owning a firearm, then maybe you ought to keep his ass in jail or execute him instead of letting him back out into society. Because once a person has fulfilled their obligation, paid their debt to society for whatever their crime was, alleged or otherwise, that should be the end of it.
Wow.
And you see, to me, what we're doing with gun laws is we're placing the blame, at least in part, and the focus on the gun and not on the individual. If you use a gun to shoot somebody and that somebody dies, are you any more or less culpable or guilty than if you'd have used a baseball bat and beaten them to death? No. So where are the laws banning convicted felons from owning a Louisville Slugger? There aren't any. Why? Because that would be ridiculous. Why? Because you can't tell someone they can't own a baseball bat. Well, how can you, when you have a clearly written Second Amendment, then claim that you can create a law to deny one person and not another? You can't do it. How do you effectively make that argument? I just don't know.
A big law, that question 7 covers that, open carry. This is a tough one, too.
Open carry, concealed carry, in your glove box, you know, in your ankle, in your sock, in your pocket, on your hip in a holster. What difference does it make?
I said yes. Okay? I said yes to that.
These are the problems I have with these stupid-ass laws. And they are that. They're absolutely ignorant laws. It's like the war on drugs. It's the most ignorant thing in the world. As you said earlier, you're not going to change human behavior by making something illegal. And no matter what PC crap we come up with next, you're not going to stop bigotry and hatred and racism. You're just not.
Exactly. You're not.
And trying to place all the blame on the method, the tool of inflicting murder or, you know, personal injury on someone else is just foolish.
Wow.
It's the human action that causes the injury, not the gun, not the knife, not the ball bat, not the cinder block, not the car. It's the human being.
Wow.
That causes the action. Inanimate objects are not in and of themselves able to inflict pain and injury upon another human being. It takes human action.
Now,
even if it's
eight,
tripping
wrong.
And falling on a pair of scissors, you know?
Well, this is a...
Yes, sir.
College and university campuses carry. This is where I had a problem. Laws limiting where law-abiding citizens can carry a firearm for self-defense are an attack upon their right to defend themselves. Banning the carrying of firearms on a state-run university or college campus is a direct subversion of the United States Constitution. Statistics show that campuses are extremely dangerous, especially to women. Florida currently bans carry. So, do I agree with that or not agree? I say no.
I said no,
and then underneath no, I put professors should carry guns.
I don't know if you're agreeing with campus carry or disagreeing with campus carry. Here's my take on it.
I disagree with campus carry because the students that I went to school with were capable of handling a gun in the classroom. Period.
Okay.
Because there have been.
So what you're?
There
well,
have been,
well, hold on. No. Just stop right there. Stop right there. So, what you're telling me is that you, Robert, feel that you are better qualified to judge another person's right to self-defense than they are.
No, I'm saying that we never had any protection, period. None of us had protection.
It may be a false sense of security, and it may be a poor decision.
What happened in Louisville was you know, my brother made a comment to me one day, one night when the Louisville incident happened. And he goes, "Aren't you afraid of getting gunned down at where you go to school?" I said, "No, I'm not afraid. I said if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. But I can't carry a gun. We're not allowed to carry a gun. But I'm just saying, if we're not allowed to carry a gun, then what's the point of having a gun if it becomes legal?" I don't know how to answer that question.
Here's how I answer that question.
Huh?
It's not up to me to. Here's how I'll answer that question for you. Okay, this is how I look at it. It's not up to me to decide whether or not a fellow student at university is capable or should,
I don't know who's,
or should
yeah, but I don't know
carry
who's
a firearm.
Capable, but I don't know who's capable or not capable of carrying a gun.
And no one, sir, can give you the authority to determine who's capable and who's not capable.
That's my point.
That was my point. Is an individual choice. It's not a choice for the state to make. It's not a choice for Robert Kaplan to make. It is a choice for the individual to make. And you know, if the individual makes the wrong choice and they're a careless person who likes to act like a jerk and show off that they have a gun, and they end up getting shot because someone felt that they were being threatened with a firearm, guess what? Those are the consequences of piss-poor life decisions. It's called responsibility for one's own actions. We must be responsible for our own decisions and our own actions. It's nobody else's fault.
So the answer is yes.
I would support carry by anyone, anywhere they would like. That brings up another point. Why do you think that they don't want you carrying a gun in the courtroom?
Because my fellow court reporter in Atlanta, Georgia, got her braids blown out.
I wonder why that is.
Well, she went to school with me.
That
helped me.
I'm sure it did.
We had
an incident here in Georgia. I don't know, maybe that's the same one you're talking about.
Yeah, that's the same one. She was my classmate in court reporting school in Atlanta.
Robert, who brought the gun into the building?
Huh?
Who brought that gun into the building? Wasn't the criminal.
I don't know. It's probably a stupid you-know-what. I don't know.
It was a damn cop. It was a cop, and the guy wrestled the gun away from her in the elevator when they were bringing him up to the courtroom. So, here again. Now we're going to pick and choose who gets to carry a gun to the courtroom. And, thank God, look at there. There's a reason. Again, it goes back to that polite society.
Ron, why do they word it so difficult where you can't understand it? That's my point.
It seems to me to be very clear because they're steering you towards a specific answer. That's why. There was a USA Today poll some time ago, and people were sending it to me, and I'm like, it pissed me off because it was a similar question. And the question was, do you believe that the Second Amendment to the Constitution grants the right for all people to keep and bear arms? Well, I know the answer that everyone's looking for is yes, of course, but the actual truth is no. It does no such thing. It's a piece of paper with words written on it. And what that Second Amendment does is it memorializes society's recognition that with or without government, we have the right of self-defense, including keeping and bearing firearms, which at the time were somewhat rudimentary compared to what they are today. But nonetheless, we weren't talking about just shotguns and single-shot rifles. They were talking about the latest, most up-to-date military weaponry, period.
Right, right.
The fact is that we don't need government to tell us that we have this right. This is us telling the government, this is non-negotiable, hands off.
Oh.
That's what the Second Amendment does or is supposed to do. But clearly, we see the same problem that has afflicted every empire and every society on the face of this earth. Every one of them has failed, and every one of them has failed for exactly the same exact reason. Government.
Wow. Well, see, this is going on to what you said on private sales. I think someone's at my door.
Probably wanting to sell you a gun.
I wish they would, but it says private sales. Restricting law abiding, we're almost done because we have one more. Restricting law abiding citizens from privately selling firearms to other law abiding citizens is simply a way to further restrict what should be a protected right and opens the door to a national firearms debate. In addition, there is absolutely no evidence to support the notion that banning private sales would have any effect on crime. Government needs to stay out of private firearm sales, and I put yes.
That is correct. Yes, they do. All right, what's your last one?
At least I got something right. Question number 10, preemption. State preemption is the concept of firearms laws ought to be uniform throughout the state. No local unit of government or state agency should be able to enact rules or ordinances governing firearms. Do you agree?
Absolutely agree.
Or firearm accessories in addition or stronger than state law. Florida currently
has a strongly...
Okay.
Isn't it funny? If you read that and then you read, I believe it was your second question, that is the pot calling the kettle black, isn't it?
Yes, with the succession question.
Well, it absolutely is, because in the first instance, you have the state saying, we reserve the right to ignore federal laws that don't agree with our state gun laws. And then in the last question, they said, you know, the state reserves the right to supersede any county or township laws or ordinances that don't agree with the state.
Damn, Ron, thank you so much. You really helped.
So it's kind of a...
I mean, there was more questions than I answered by myself, but I think I... Now that I got these down, I could just use them as a guideline, right?
But to me, your last question is only good if the state is not trying to implement restrictive gun laws and violate the individual's right to keep and bear arms and the right to self-defense. Because once you pass the one, that number 10, you say, okay, no preemption by any, then the state suddenly, the political makeup in the state capital turns and they repeal some gun laws and they institute some new ones, and suddenly every county and township and municipality in the state is bound to be in violation of the state constitution or the U.S. Constitution by state law. So, it presents a quandary. And
it
when
does.
I said that, you
I mean,
know,
I got, Ron, I got a headache for doing all this stuff. I had to answer agriculture. I had to answer family policy, abortion, gambling, greyhound racing, abuse. My God, I have a headache right now. And finally,
well, you
I,
should
I've
have,
almost,
because what they're asking you. And see, here's the thing, and I have not read Florida's state constitution, but one of the best things I ever heard come out of a politician's mouth was at a committee hearing that I was attending as a lobbyist, and it was a tit-for-tat thing about fighting roosters, for God's sakes. And I was really ticked because I thought, no pun intended, but I don't have a dog in this fight, so to speak, because I could give a damn less about cockfighting. I just didn't care one way or the other. But as I sat and listened to the presentation, and what they do is they go around the table, all the legislators that are in the committee, and they each get to ask a question and make a statement. So they came to this one fellow who was a local guy, and he looks at the gentleman that is proposing this new bill to make it a felony to be present on the property where a cockfight takes place, even if you weren't aware it was there. Like the UPS guy delivering a package, he's now convicted of a felony. But nonetheless, he looks at this guy and he says, you know, our Georgia state constitution says that the sole purpose for our office, that the office that we hold, is to secure the blessings of liberty to our constituents and to their posterity, and to secure their right to property. So my question is, what portion of your bill accomplishes those goals, and how does it accomplish those goals? And how does it accomplish it? Well, you could have heard a pin drop, because it didn't do any of those things. What it did was try to restrict the use of a person's private personal property in the way that they found enjoyable. No matter how reprehensible, I think, cockfighting might be, if some guy raises gamecocks and wants to fight him with his neighbor's gamecocks, it's really none of my damned business.
Right.
You see, the state cannot be everything to everyone, and that is why I said that every empire has failed, and every one of them has failed for the exact same reasons: an over-bloated bureaucratic government. Government starts out small and then grows as it tries to be everything to everyone until it reaches a point of critical mass where it can no longer support itself or all of the ticks that have latched onto the government teat, and it collapses in itself. And that's what we're witnessing in this country right now. And it's getting a hell of a lot of help from what? Government. Whether you want to call it progressive left or progressive right or, you know, center left or center, it doesn't matter. It's government, and everybody has an angle. Everybody has an angle on why they should get a slice of the public pie. And eventually it gets to the point where there's just not enough pie to feed all the ticks that have latched onto the teat, and that's where we're getting there. We're pretty damn close.
Yeah. Next Monday, Ron, I'm going to call in and I'm going to read you the articles. I just had a battle with Sarasota Herald Tribune, and I had a battle with my two opponents because they're just bickering over me. And you know what, Ron? If I hadn't run, okay, the primaries would have been closed, and I got body slammed. You know, you understand? I was the one.
Oh, no, I understand.
I was the fall guy. So I fought back, and I challenged the St. Pete Times to a debate. I challenged Sarasota, the Herald, to a debate. And I challenged Governor Scott to a debate. I took them all on. I said, invite them all in. I'll debate them. I challenged them to do a debate. That's all I want is a debate. So Wednesday, I'm going on the radio show, 107.5 FM, for I don't know how long I'm going to be. And then on the 25th, there's going to be a forum down in Inglewood. So, you know, I'm just going to go with the flow. And, you know, this is the bottom line for why I'm running in that, and I change parties. If there's any bill that's going to be harmful to my constituents, I will vote no for it. I'm their watchdog. That's the bottom line. You know?
Well, just remember that sometimes those bills are wolves in sheep's clothing. They look beneficial, and then once they're enacted, they're not so good.
Exactly.
Robert, thank you for calling in, sir. I'm out of time.
All right, sir. Thank you for having me, and I appreciate you helping me out, sir.
Not a problem. Always glad to hear from you.
All right, my man.
Want to thank everybody.
I hope Frank knows I'm running, and I hope that he'll come out of the woodwork and help me out, because I could use some advice.
No problem. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. God bless our Patriot family folks up at the family reunion in Delaney Park, Indiana. You guys have a good time, and we'll see y'all on the flip side. I'm out of here. Thanks for tuning
in,
guys.
Have a good evening.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.